So in this text, the student approaches the teacher and says, I want the highest knowledge, which will take me beyond sorrow. The information we get in this world, whether it's physics or chemistry or medicine or science, gives us temporary benefit, you know, some financial benefit, some mental satisfaction, but does not give us permanent joy, permanent peace. Sooner or later, all the problems of the world come to us, no matter how successful, how great, how powerful I might be. So the student is not asking for worldly knowledge. He's asking for the spiritual knowledge. So the teacher says in the first few verses, Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana, Yoga, Tavaihi. This knowledge can be obtained by faith in the scriptures, faith in the Guru, by devotion or love for God, and by meditation. So then the student obviously wants to know what is meditation. And so the next two or three verses, which we are today on the seventh verse, but the next two or three verses talk about the technique of meditation, the goal of meditation. And then last 2 weeks, we have been studying to meditate on the formless, because God is all pervading. Here, Om represents the divinity in me, and it's the divinity in all. There is one consciousness that illumines everything, this body of mine. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts, propelled by my vasanas, my desires, selfish desires or vasanas. And it is the consciousness within me that is illumining all fields, all animals, all birds, all plants, all fish. Everything is energized, illumined by that one consciousness. And obviously that one consciousness, which is all pervading everywhere, cannot have a limited form. You cannot say it is only the form of Jesus or only the form of Shiva or Krishna, because then you are limiting that consciousness. If you say it's only this, then it's nothing else. You are limiting. So that is why we say that consciousness, the Lord, is within and without. It is everywhere. It is here in space. It is between you and me. So it does not have a particular form. And that formless should be meditated upon. And the student said, it's very hard. You know, how can I meditate on formless? It is very difficult. Because I don't know what this formless is. He says in this, achintyam, cannot be thought of, cannot be. It's unmanifest. I don't know what it looks like. It has no shape, color, appearance. So the teacher, out of compassion for us, and the Lord, out of compassion for us, takes various forms. Like if you look around this room, there are various forms of God. There is the Ganpati, Saraswati, Lakshmi. So the various forms of God are given. And then when you go to a Christian temple, you find Jesus on the cross, or you find Mother Mary. Those are all manifestations of that Lord. In a Buddhist temple, you know, you will see Buddha statues. In a Sikh temple, you see the book, Guru Granth Sahib. So the book represents the form of the Lord. The Lord, who is formless, has appeared as the form of the book, or the Guru is the... So each one of us needs a form to love. It becomes very difficult to love a formless, one that has no shape, no color, no appearance. So that's why in the seventh verse, he says, okay, if you have difficulty meditating on the formless, which all of us might have in the beginning when we start meditation, then he said, you can pick a form. And it can be your favorite form. It doesn't have to be. In this case, the student, his deity was Lord Shiva. Shiva is one of the manifestations of that total formless. And, you know, it can be Krishna, it can be Shiva, it can be Jesus, it can be Buddha, it doesn't matter what it is. So this particular text talks about the form of Lord Shiva. This is the form that was given to the student because so each one of us in Hinduism are allowed to pick a particular form that you particularly love. Maybe you love the mother goddess, or maybe you love a Lord in the form of a baby, you know, like baby Jesus. A lot of, you know, people in Christianity love baby Jesus, A lot of people love God as a husband, like the nuns. They say, I am married to Christ. So it can be a way, different forms, and you can have different relationships. So here we are doing verse number 7. Uma Sahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum Trilochanam Neelakantham Prashantam Dhyatva Muni Gacchati Bhutayonim Samastasakshim Tamasav Parastat. We can chant it together if you want, or I'll just chant. Uma Sahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum Trilochanam Neelakantham Prashantam Dhyatva Munirgachati Bhutayonim Samasta Sakshim Tamasah Parastat. So Uma Sahayam. So Shiva is said to be supported by Uma, his consort. So each one of our gods has a female aspect. You can call it consort, you can call it wife, you can call it the female support. So like Brahmaji, the creator, has Saraswati, the goddess of knowledge. Vishnu has Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth. And then Shiva, who is the third aspect. They say God has three aspects: the creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer. That's why G-O-D, God is generator, organizer, destroyer. So God creates us, takes care of us while we are alive, and then when it's time for us to leave, takes us away. So Brahma is considered the creator, one aspect, and Vishnu is the one that takes care of us while we are alive. And then Shiva, the third aspect of this trinity, takes us away when it's time to leave. You say, well, that is a terrible form of God. You know, why does he kill us? Why does he take us away? But think about it. If there is no death, then the earth will become overpopulated. Suppose the dinosaurs had not died. You know, the dinosaurs, there was a comet that came and destroyed. So God was so terrible, he destroyed all the dinosaurs. The comet came. If they had not died, there would have been no civilization. Dinosaurs would still be ruling, and humans and nothing would have survived. Or if my grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-great, none of them ever died, the earth, instead of 7 billion, would have 100 billion, and there would be not even place to stand. You would be, you know, rubbing against each other. Forget about food and clothing and house. Death is necessary. It's called creative destruction. As the old dies, a new comes, like a seed perishes, like the seed you put in the ground, but the seed perishes, but out of that comes a plant, a tree. And then in the tree grows a flower. Ah, beautiful flower. But when the flower is pollinated, the flower dies and out comes a fruit. You say, why does the flower have to die? If the flower doesn't die, there would be no fruits. Then the fruit you eat, or it perishes, it falls to the ground, and the seed comes out, and the seed goes in the ground, the fruit perishes, the seed again starts a new, you know, new tree. So the creation and destruction is continuous. Destruction is necessary. So Shiva represents a destructive power. Now, Shiva's consort is Uma. Uma is also called Parvati, or also called Parvati. That is what it is called. So here it is said that the male and female represents matter and spirit. See, we are all combination of matter and spirit. Spirit is the consciousness, and matter is this body, mind, and intellect, which is made of inert matter. This body is inert, but when the spirit consciousness is present, it enlivens and we are able to function. also the combination of male and female shows that this whole universe is a combination of male and female energy. Just as a child is also a combination of male and female, even in a tree, you know, when there is pollination, it is the male and the female together that they create a new flower, a new plant, in animals, in birds, in fish. So similarly, in the total creation, there is male energy and there is female energy, and they're both equal. It's not that one is superior and one is inferior. The whole universe is a combination of male and female energy. That's why it is said it is the consort. Then the next word is Parameshwar, the highest Lord. Now, what do we mean? Why are they saying Shiva is the highest? You know, or a Christian will say, I object to that. No, Jesus is higher than Shiva. Or a person who loves Krishna will say, no, Krishna is higher. Or Guru Nanak is higher. What we say is that you need to find one form of God you love, which in your mind is the highest, but you respect all other forms. It's not that you say, my God is superior and everybody else is garbage and they need to be destroyed. No, that's not it. It's like the example I have mentioned before also. Suppose a lady gets married into a house and her husband has five brothers and sisters. So beside the husband, there are five brothers and sisters. Now, she loves her husband the most, right? Generally, at least in the beginning of the marriage, maybe not after a few years. But when they first get married, okay, I love my husband the most. But the other five brothers and sisters, you respect them all, right? You say, oh, they are my husband's brothers and sisters. So I respect them, I love them, but not to the extent that I love my husband. My husband for me is number one. And everybody else I respect. Okay, they are my husband's brothers and sisters, so I respect them. So similarly, a true devotee of God picks one form that he or she loves, and that is my Ishta Devta, they say. That is my beloved Lord, and all other forms I respect, because they are all ultimately that one consciousness has taken all these forms. So all these forms are nothing but that one consciousness appearing in all these forms. So I respect them all. But the Lord, my Lord, is all powerful. And that is true, because they say God is all powerful. He created the whole earth. He created all the plants, the birds, the fish, the animals. Not only that, but there are so many stars and there are billions of galaxies. And not only that, but there are heaven and hell and all these different creatures. Everything is he has created, and he is the all-powerful creator who sustains this whole universe. Everything in this universe is supported by that one consciousness. In the Gita, he says, I am like the thread that just as that holds this whole universe together. Just as in a necklace there are say different poles, there are 30 or 40 poles. And then there is an invisible thread or an invisible chain, gold chain, or it could be just a regular thread, which holds this necklace together. Suppose the thread were to break, the necklace would fall apart and would no longer be a necklace, would be just a collection of pearls. So similarly, the Lord says, I am the thread that holds this whole universe together. I am the one. This whole universe works in perfect harmony. You know, the animals, the plants, all the earth is rotating around the sun, and all the planets and comets, everything is working because of that one Lord. Then it is said he is three-eyed. If you look at this picture closely, Shiva has three eyes. So they say, that is strange. Why would a god have three eyes? So there are many meanings of the word three-eyed. Two eyes we all have, right? Two eyes I have. And with that I can see the world. But I see the world as different. You know, she is different from me. She is different from me. He is different. I like him. I don't like her. She's my friend. He's my enemy. So I divide the world into friends and enemies and, you know, I like and dislike, and this belongs to my church, he belongs to my race, my community, my religion, my country. So mine and all these the differences happen. So when the third eye of wisdom comes in a wise person, that shows oneness. So a wise person, that's why Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. And thy neighbor could be anybody. He didn't say, love thy Christian neighbor as thyself. No, love thy neighbor, whether he's a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, or he doesn't even believe in God, but love the neighbor as thyself. So these wise people see everything as one. They see themselves in all. But you and I, because we don't have this third eye of wisdom, we see the differences. So this represents the eye of wisdom. It's not that by studying, suddenly you will develop a third eye which will open. What it means is that with that eye of wisdom, I see the whole world as one. Advaita, that is the idea. Also, the third eye represents knowledge. It's like most of us have two eyes. You know, so when you have a child, how do you bring the child up? With love and justice. Two eyes. So I should love the child, but I also should be firm. If the child is not behaving or doing something wrong and I need to correct that child, so I use the eye of justice. So one eye of knowledge, one eye of love to love the child, and one eye of justice to discipline where it is required, not to punish, but to direct them in the right path. So I have love and I have justice. But if I don't have the third eye of knowledge, then I may misdirect the child. So truly, if you want to guide the child, you need love, you need justice, and you need knowledge. So that's why three eyes. So the Lord has three eyes. So that is called Trilochanam. Then he is said to have a blue neck. Now there is a long story which is given in the book. I won't repeat it. But it is said one in detail, but it said one time the gods and the demons wanted to create nectar to make them immortal. And compared to us, the gods are immortal. You know, we live for only 60 or 70 or 80 years, but gods live for thousands of years, billions of years. So this immortality they needed. So when they were churning the ocean, initially out came poison. And when that poison came, it would have destroyed the whole universe. The whole earth would have been destroyed. So they invoked Lord Shiva and he came and drank the poison and the poison stayed in his neck. So this story symbolizes that in our mind, when we sit for meditation, there is churning going on. There is contemplation. I'm thinking, you know, and then with that thinking, I make my mind single pointed. So in that churning, when I have reading the book and there is churning of knowledge, and when I sit for meditation, people who go deep into meditation sometimes experience a lot of negativity. A lot of negativity comes out, a lot of anger or fear. Initially, of course, you experience a lot of peace and bliss. You know, when you sit for meditation, your mind is very quiet, very peaceful. But then as people go deeper, they may experience temporarily the outpouring of vasanas, which may generate fear or anger or anxiety. So at that time, the ego appears and manifests. So they say that a wise person should keep that poison in his neck. If there is any poison, if there is any anger or hostility towards others, keep that in the neck, neither in the head nor in the heart. So what it means is that if I have any negative tendencies towards anybody, they should not poison my head or poison my heart. If I have any anger or if I have any, control it, keep it in your throat. Don't let it affect your brain where you start thinking negative about others, and don't let it affect your heart where you don't love others. Is that clear? The neck, blue neck. Ever tranquil. The Lord Shiva, as you see in this picture, is very peaceful. He is in deep meditation, sitting there very peaceful. So what it represents that a person, when they go into deep meditation, their mind becomes very peaceful, very tranquil. Because usually our mind is agitated. It is running. It is, you know, thinking about a thousand things at one time. Even when I sit for meditation in the beginning, my mind is running like anything. But with practice, slowly, I can quieten my mind and make the mind peaceful. So the closer my mind gets to Lord's presence within, in meditation we contemplate upon God, who is not only outside as Krishna or Shiva or Jesus, or as the God who is in the sun and the moon, but the God within that is illumining my life, my consciousness. So as my mind becomes quieter and quieter, less disturbed, it comes closer to the divinity within, and then I experience the inner peace, the inner bliss. That's why people after meditation feel very peaceful, feel their mind very quiet. If their meditation has been, you know, peaceful, in the beginning it may be, you know, maybe a little bit of a struggle or a little bit, but as you progress in meditation, it's like in playing golf, you know, the first time you hit the ball, it goes in, first of all, you don't even hit the ball, you completely miss it. Or if you do hit it, it goes here or goes there or goes. But as you practice, then slowly, then your ball goes exactly where you want it. Or whether even you are playing tennis, first, you know, so then that peace comes when you become successful. Just so then that shot, when it goes, you know, 50 yards or 100 yards or 80 yards, you feel very good. Why? Because it has been successful. So similarly, in meditation, the mind becomes, as it becomes quieter, it is more success. So that's why the Lord is said to be ever tranquil, ever peaceful. Because in meditation, I meditate upon the peaceful, shantam, prashantam, the peaceful one. That's why we say shanti, 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 you know, three times in meditation. Because it is, shanti means peace. So it is ever tranquil. And it should be meditated upon. Dhyatva Muni. Muni is the meditator. Where does he reach? Bhuta Yonim. The source of the manifested world. Because the Lord is said to be the source. Because even the Bible says God alone was. There was nothing first. And there was no air, space, fire, water, earth. There was nothing. Only God. And then from himself, he created this whole universe in 6 days, and seventh day he rested. So that's what we believe, that we originated from God and we are all creatures or manifestations of that one divinity, and the divinity in every one of us is symbolized here as Om. So Muni Gacchati Bhuta Yonim. So once you meditate upon him, you reach the source of the meditated world. Just as the mud is the source of all the pots, gold is the source of all the jewelry, ocean is the source of all the waves, so similarly God or consciousness is the source of this whole universe. And God can be male or female, it doesn't have, or it can be neither, it can be formless. So we do not say God is only male, but God is the substratum. So here it is male, but somebody loves Mother Goddess, you know, they can worship. We just, you know, finished Navratri, where we worship the Mother Goddess for 9 days. So it is the source of this whole universe. Then it says Samasta Sakshim. It is the witness of all. Witness means one who knows the body, mind and intellect. So at this moment, I'm aware of my body, right? I'm sitting on a chair. I'm sitting here in Chinmaya Mission. It is 7 o'clock in the evening on a Thursday. So I'm aware of that. I'm also aware that my mind is feeling some emotions. You know, maybe I'm bored, or maybe I'm, you know, depressed, or maybe I'm unhappy, or I'm saying, oh, this is not bad. You know, it's okay. I am, you know, or I am. And then I'm also aware of my thoughts, whether I'm understanding, I'm not understanding, I'm confused. Do I have a right understanding? Talking about right understanding just reminds me of a little story. So there was this priest who moved new into a town. He had just moved in. And so he wanted to go to the post office to pick up stamps. This was on the days before internet when people used to have something called stamps. Nowadays we don't have, but anyway, in those days they did. So he was going to the post office to buy some stamps. And so he was new in this town. He had no idea where to go. So he was standing at a crossroad. He was confused. And this boy comes in a bike. So he stops him. He says, listen, Sonny, can you tell me where the post office is? He says, yeah, you go right. And then the traffic light, you turn, go straight to the traffic light. You turn right there and it's two blocks and you'll reach it. Oh, thank you, son. So then the boy was standing waiting for the light to change. So he tells him, you know what? Do you go to church? No, father, I don't go to church. He says, you know, the church I am is just down the street. Why don't you come there every Sunday? You know, you should be going to church. So he says, why should I go to church? So the priest says, well, I'll teach you how to go to heaven. I'll teach you how to go to heaven. So the boy says, you don't even know the way to the post office. How are you going to tell me how, how to get to heaven? So anyway, but the point is that that is the right knowledge. So we have to have the right knowledge. So here I need to know, what do I meditate on? So he says, I meditate on the witness of all. I am the witnessing consciousness. I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of my mind. And I'm aware of my thoughts. So whether my thoughts are right or wrong, whether I'm confused, whether I know what I'm doing, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm aware of that. So in meditation, you quieten your mind and then you tell yourself, I am the witnessing consciousness. We always, every week, we meditate on that. I am the witnessing consciousness. I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of my mind. I'm aware of my thoughts. I'm aware of my emotions. But I am none of those. I am the witnessing consciousness. Now the word witness is a very interesting word. What is a witness? Suppose somebody is called to a court of law and they say that, you know, a murder was committed, a man shot another person, a robber was trying to rob, and the guy wouldn't give his wallet, and so he shot him and killed him. Now, there's another man who was driving in the car and he happened to see it and he saw the whole incident. So he's called to the court to witness, right? So first he's asked, do you know the robber or this man? He says, no, I didn't know them before. I saw them, the incident. But are you related to the robber or are you related to the person who was shot? No, Honor, I had no idea. I don't even know them. But I just happened to have parked my car at the traffic light and I saw, stopped my car, and I saw this man shooting another. And I clearly remember this was the guy. So first of all, the witness is not involved. Suppose he is related, you know, a friend of the robber. Then he might, you know, lie. He might say, no, 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 it wasn't this. No, he says, I have nothing to do with it. So that's number one. Number two, he has seen the entire incident. He was there before the shooting, during the shooting, and after the shooting, he saw the man running away. Now, suppose he says, I came there, but the shooting had already happened. And then I saw the man running. Then he's not a reliable witness. Yeah, he saw the man running, but did you see him shoot? No, Your Honor, I didn't see him shoot. Then you are no longer a good witness. So a witness is one, A, who is not involved, and B, is there before, during, and after the incident. So that's why God is said to be the witness, because A, he's not involved in the world. He creates the world, gives us wisdom to think, and then it is up to us how we deal with the world, and depending on our actions, we get good or bad results. He is not involved in that. He says, I don't decide. You decide what your destiny will be. At the same time, God is there before the world was created, while the world is created, and after the world ends, God will be there. So before the creation, during the creation, and after the dissolution, that consciousness is present. That's why it is said to be the witness of all. And the last point about God that is mentioned in this particular text. Of course, there are many qualities. There are hundreds of qualities we can point out. But the one they mention in this text is, it is beyond darkness. It is beyond darkness. What do we mean by beyond darkness? One meaning of beyond darkness is ignorance. At this moment, I don't know who I am, but as I meditate, I get this knowledge that I am not only this body, mind, and intellect, but I am the spirit, the consciousness. So that is number one. That is one meaning of darkness, that is beyond ignorance. But beyond darkness has another meaning. Now, suppose you are sitting here and I ask you, are you here? You know, of course I'm here. I'm sitting on this chair. I can see everything. But suppose the lights go completely off. It's pitch dark. And then I ask Sanjay, are you here? Sanjay is sitting here. Are you here? Sanjay won't say, wait a minute, turn on the light. Then I can tell you whether I'm here or not. No, he's not going to say that. He knows I'm here. I don't need to turn on the light. Or Barbara, if I ask Barbara, are you here? She says, yeah, I'm here. The lights are off. The power went out, but I'm here. So I may need the light to see if Barbara is here or not. If Barbara is here, if the lights are off, I may not know if she's here or not. But when the lights are on, I can see her. But I do not need a light to see myself. I do not say, turn on a light and then I will tell you whether I am here or not. No, I know I am here. So this, what they say, beyond darkness means that you do not, it is the one that illumines the whole world. Like the sun is illumined because of God's presence, but the sun itself is self-luminous. So that is what they are saying. This consciousness is present even in darkness. Even in darkness, my eyes may not function. I may not see somebody else. I may not be able to hear anything if it's pin drop silence, but I know myself that I am present. So these are the beautiful qualities of this Lord, God, or consciousness, who is male and female energy combined, is the most powerful, the highest Lord, as the eye of wisdom, keeps his negativity under control, does not let affect his brain or his head. So the idea is we should have all these qualities. We shouldn't say God has them, so I don't need to. No, I need to develop these qualities. That's why Jesus could say the Father in heaven and I are one. So that is what we all need to develop, that the divine qualities are in me. I need to develop the wisdom. I need to develop peacefulness. I need to be tranquil. I need to be a witness. So these are the qualities. So as you meditate, so you become. Like a person wanting to learn basketball, he watches all the videos of Michael Jordan. A person wanting to learn golf may see how Tiger Woods or Arnold Palmer used to play. A person wanting to learn physics will read about the life of Einstein and Oppenheimer and so on. So a spiritual seeker needs to learn about God, become one with him. So that is the essence of this seventh verse. I went over a little time because, you know, we had to cover all the points. I didn't want to go another week. Any questions or comments?
You just have to learn all this?
We don't have to learn. I mean, you can if you want. But he said to be the Lord of dance means all dance originates from him. All art, all music originates from God. And it is said that he, in his ecstasy, does dance. And a lot of dancers, there are particular dances which is said he dances. And how do we know that? Because people in their deep meditation have gone into the higher worlds and seen all this. They have seen Mother Durga riding on a tiger. They have seen Shiva sitting in meditation. They have seen Ganpati with the elephant head. So all these things are proven by these people. I mean, not proven in the sense they cannot show it. But they say if you go into deep meditation and if you believe in that, a person who believes in Lord Shiva will see him. A person who believes in Mother, you know, Saraswati, like writers and musicians, They love Mother Saraswati. So in their deep meditation, they feel her presence. A person who loves Jesus, you know, in his deep meditation will feel the love and compassion, you know, of Jesus or Mother Mary and her, you know, love. And so depending on your, what is your Ishta Devta, who is your idol, you will see that or you will experience that.
And are they the basic three, the creator, the sustainer of life?
The destroyer, yes.
Okay.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to
yeah, and their consorts.
And their consorts, right.
Right. Like Vishnu has many manifestations. He appeared as Ram, he appeared as Krishna, he appeared as Parshuram. So there are 10 dashavatar, 10 manifestations of Vishnu. So in the Gita, it said that whenever the world is suffering and under negative influences, the Lord says, I appear. So in Jerusalem, he appeared as Jesus. In Arabia, he appeared as Muhammad. In India, he appeared as Buddha or as, you know, Krishna or Ram. So to eradicate evil and to bring the good, eradicate wrong ideas. And like in the time of Jesus, there was a lot of, you know, wrong beliefs and a lot of violence and animal sacrifice and human sacrifice, all those things. So he came to eradicate all that ignorance. So God appears, yada, in the 18th chapter, he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So he says, whenever the good people are suffering and the evil is prospering, I come. It could be good ideas or it could be good thoughts or it could be the good world. So God appears at different times to bless us. And it can be different forms in different parts of the world. And it's the same prophet in India may speak in Sanskrit or Hindi or, you know, Gujarati, while in Bethlehem, he might speak in, you know, Hebrew or might speak in Arabic. Or so the language of that particular place, you know, they speak in. That is the idea. Yeah. Like the prophets today speak in English. Because majority of the people, you know English. So that has become the international language. But still, if they are speaking in a remote part of India where people don't understand English, they would speak in their state language or the regional language. Like a prophet is, suppose in China or Russia, you know, there is a, like Confucius or, you know, they spoke in Chinese. So it does not mean that teaching is inferior or superior. It's just a different language at different times, in different period, and depending on the quality of the student, they have to speak. Thank you for a good question. Okay, what we'll do is we'll start by meditating upon the form of God, and see one thing I have to explain to everybody: the form should lead to the formless. The form should lead that this one form is the total universe is in that. So that is the idea, that don't only get limited to the form, but say that form is also within me as consciousness and is the total consciousness. So the form should lead to the formless. That is the idea, and that is everywhere. So God is not only in the temple or church, but is everywhere, is there even in all the plants, all the birds. So everything needs to be respected. That is called. So that is the idea. Form should lead to formless. Eyes closed. Back erect, but not stiff. Have a soft smile on the lips. Meditation is my private appointment with God, my personal time with my Creator. Consciously relax each part of the body from the head down to the toes. And from the toes back up to the head. Pay attention to each part of the body and relax. Now observe your breath. Pay full attention to the air as it moves in and out. Body is relaxed, and I'm watching my breath. Slow, deep breaths. The mind wanders, bring it back to the breath. Now turn your attention to the form of Lord. Pick any form that you wish. Be Krishna, Shiva, Guru Nanak, Jesus. Visualize that clearly in your mind. Keep watching the mind, in your mind, the form from head to toe. Pay every attention to the head, the face, the peaceful smile, the hands, the body, the feet. Observe each part of the body, what clothes the Lord is wearing. Could be even the Mother Goddess. If it's Krishna, it's playing the flute. If it's Jesus, he may be on the cross. See the eyes filled with love and compassion. I am seeing nothing but the form of the Lord. I am aware of nothing but His presence. Slowly expand the form. Let it fill the entire universe. Everything is in that. It's all pervading the whole sky, the entire space, and even me, I am in that. Everything is that, including me. All plants, all birds, everything, all stars, planets, all humans. Everything is that, and so am I. There is nothing but my Lord everywhere. The Lord is not only form but also formless. It's not only limited but it's infinite, it's total, and that is me. I am not separate from that divinity. I am the witnessing consciousness, samasta sakshi. I am aware of this body, mind and intellect, but I am not involved. Stay with this idea for a few minutes. See that one Lord everywhere. Don't limit him or her.
Oh.